Welcome to the Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap. PFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
To the Collision. This is the place where sports and politics collide, only at your home for jazz and justice. 89.3 FM WPFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time, for the simple reason that we are your home for jazz and justice. Now, we have a great show this week. I'm Dave Zirin. I want to bring in co-host extraordinaire, the Chuckster himself. Some call him Modi. I call him the Chuckster. His name, Chuck Modiano. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself, DZ?
Well, it's been, you know, a rough go of things, both in the broader political framework.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, in some of the sporting side of things. But, you know, I feel like we almost have to do a public service announcement to start the show, because we live here in Washington, D.C., the city, certainly the media, but really like the police. I mean, all the forces that be in D.C. are absolutely on a tear right now because of the tragic shooting of two Israeli embassy officials late last night. And Chuck and I aren't going to go deep into this, mainly because the facts are not fully known. But I think one thing that we do both agree upon is that the people who are going to bear the true brunt of this, other than the victims' families, of course, is going to be the Palestinian movement. It's going to give more excuses for crackdowns, more excuses for try to delegitimize what the movement is, to lie about what it is. And there is a tremendous irony in them decrying the music, the movement, as in any way, shape, or form violent, because it's not, especially in the context of trying to stop horrific violence overseas. But I think the number one thing we got to take away for me, Chuck, is that people got to be patient. People got to read a lot. People got to let the facts come out. Definitely listen to the lawyer for the defense, because this is DC and this is this administration. But more than anything, Chuck, I think we both agree that from a movement perspective, this is just this is tragic news.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said that, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, you look at the movement And, you know, we don't see violence anywhere in the movies.
Nowhere.
Actually, the most peaceful movie that I've ever covered in anywhere, unless the police do something. So, you know, there's that. And but that concern that you mentioned is very, very real. And I think I'm going to bring us back to, the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. And when the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting, which was done by a white supremacist, came in and killed Tree of Life, I believe it was called, the synagogue, and killed a bunch of Jews there. And when that happened, what happened next wasn't a movement against white supremacists and white supremacy. What happened was that was twisted and used to pass many anti-BDS laws, which have been escalated since then. And that was a white supremacist. Mm. So any time in the past, it could have nothing to do with Palestine and white supremacy we moved over to Israeli policies. So if that happened then, and there are many other examples I don't have to share. Yeah, of course there's concern that this would be used in a way that when a young Palestinian child and a Palestinian's here in America, or Muslims get shot, we don't have a reaction. It's a one-day story and it moves on. So I'm always going to be concerned if something could help the killing of thousands of people and used in a false way. So that's fair to be concerned about that, because we have history to be concerned about that.
A lot of concerns all around. Like I said, and I know Chuck agrees with me on this, let's let the facts come out. Yep. And there'll be time to do political assessments of this. I think a lot of us are still in shock. This happened late last night.
There will be. But since we are talking about media and sort of how media operates and social media, as somebody who is shadow banned on social media, and anybody who does Free Palestine is shadow banned, like say on X, if I cover Nakba this weekend, which I did, it's shadow banned. And the first time in my life I've seen Free Palestine trend on X. And I've been at rallies where we've had hundreds of thousands of people in November 2023. And I've covered over hundreds of Free Palestine protests since 2014. And not once were all those people, or hundreds of thousands, could get Free Palestine trend. And today is the first day I see that. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here from a social media perspective? And what's interesting is by it trending, it's brought up many other tweets from the last few days or last few weeks on Free Palestine that never would have trended. So I just want to throw that out there to see the depth of social media censorship.
And let me just also say that that was a really also whiplash moment for me when this news was revealed, because earlier in the evening, I had an incredible experience with our co-host, Etan Thomas, interviewing a beautiful anti-war, pro-Palestinian, Jewish man of great note, Ben Cohen.
That's right.
And Jerry's, who put his money where his ice cream was and actually went to the Capitol, got arrested, and it went viral in a way that he did not expect. And interestingly, his first plan was to chain himself to the White House, but there's such a moat in front of the White House, he couldn't have gotten it done. And it was actually better that he did what he did, because the video of him speaking out was so strong. And then he wrote an amazing column in Newsweek, of all places, because, you know, Newsweek is not the Newsweek of your parents. Let's just put it like that. And the column he wrote, though, made very clear, and this is what was so beautiful about the interview, Chuck, mm-hmm. is that he was there not just because of the destruction of the infrastructure and the killing of the children in Gaza, but he was also there because of recent news that lead paint poisoning has been found in the pipes of Milwaukee, major U.S. city.
Right.
And it flashed him back to Flint and the ways in which racialized class oppression is the way that I think about it, is it just, it drove him to the point where he was looking at how little money relative to, say, the Pentagon, it would take to get lead out of the water, lead out of the pipes. And yet there is a refusal to to do it. And then I thought it was funny the way you put this, how little money it would take to stop bombing Gaza.
Right.
You know, right. Not yeah. to mention billions saved.
Yeah, no, I think it's the amount saved. Yeah, exactly.
Because that was his point, was like, was stop funding Israel's genocide and move that money into getting the lead out of the darn water. So we're in a and he spoke a lot about the effects on the brain of lead poisoning. He spoke very deeply about why it was so important for him as someone raised Jewish in Brooklyn to take this stance.
Oh, yeah.
So to just go from that to like the humanism of Ben from Ben and Jerry's, Ben Cohen.
Yeah.
And to go from that to what is sure to be a hellacious crackdown. I mean, and in the middle of it, the Knicks lose in a manner that I've never seen them lose ever. So a wild night here at the Zirin household. I'll just say that.
That's right. We got to do we have to talk about the Knicks today? We're not allowed to skip over that. I'm just asking you about that. Well,
I think if nothing else, we need to acknowledge.
Let's acknowledge, yes.
That it happened. That's the one of the things the three of us, Atan, you and me, having strong commonality.
Yeah.
Is a love for the Knicks.
Hey, let me ask you, did you ever watch the famous Red Wedding episode on Game of Thrones?
I did. All the blood at the end that you never saw coming.
Yeah. And then the credits show up and you're just staring at the screen. And it does drop, like, before I found out Tyrese Halliburton's toe was on the line, you're like, did I just see what I saw when that ball bounced and went? And there's like this moment of like, you don't think it was real if you're a Knicks fan.
Well, I got texts from people like, what do you think's going to happen in OT? And I was like, what are you talking about, OT? Because I turned the television off immediately when the ball went through the net. I actually got into overtime about a minute late. I was just sitting there.
Okay. I have a worse story. I'm sorry. I have a worse story. And this is on my sports resume. When Reggie Miller scored those 8 points in the last 18.6 seconds, I shut off the TV and left because the Knicks had it in hand. And I come back a few hours later, and I'm like, a friend, hey, Knicks. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what are you talking about? And then he tells me what happened with Reggie Miller 3 hours later after I turned off the TV. And
I did the same thing.
Are you serious?
Yes, I missed the end of that game. Because I was, you know, and I never made that mistake again. But frankly, I wish I'd made that mistake last night.
Right.
Because I wouldn't have had to see that. But, you know, I can't believe it. You've probably seen the stat. But when teams are up, 7 points with 30 seconds to go, the all-time record for this is like 4 and 10,312. And the Pacers have 3 of the 4. And they're all in these playoffs.
And 2 of them against the Knicks.
Oh, just 1 against the Knicks, buddy. No, that was game 1 last night.
Okay. I didn't know if we were including the game.
No, this is all these playoffs.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah. That's how wild that is.
This has happened 4 times.
Neesmith must have made a deal with the devil. I mean, I haven't seen shooting like that at the end of the game since the famous Tracy McGrady game.
Oh, yeah.
Against San Antonio, where he scored 13 points in, I don't know how few seconds. It was just wild. The Tracy McGrady game. But that was just a regular season game where everybody thought it was over and he just went nuts.
I think that was 13 and 39 seconds,
right? This is not supposed to happen in the playoffs. And it's funny because the worst losses ever are the ones that you already put in the bank. It's your ones you already started celebrating internally. I was in celebration. Game 1, we got game 1. Yes, all right, go Knicks. I was an afterthought. And then a couple things happened. I'm like, okay, let me get back in my seat a little bit. This is getting a little bit uncomfortable. And the Knicks, and even Brunson, who's great, was uncharacteristically sloppy with the ball late, you know, like a few times. I don't know if he was tired or something, but it wasn't like one, two, or three. It was like three or four times.
And got away with a couple of errant passes, too.
Errant passes. It could have been
even worse.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was him being tired, of them characteristics. So you got to give Indiana some defense, some good credit. But they need to tighten that up as well, tighten up how they're dealing. Because they said, someone on the Knicks said, we let our foot off the gas. And you could tell they played 46 minutes and Indiana played 48 minutes.
Yeah, well, then into overtime as well.
And then there's that.
Where the Knicks did get jobbed by a terrible call on the goaltending. But at the same time, what are you going to say? I mean, you gave up that huge lead. You can't say, well, that was a bad call in overtime. It's like, dude, you were up 18 in the fourth. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, I thought there was a bad call, and you know, they say it wasn't. That before overtime, where they – I think they – had a half hour meeting to say that the forearm of
was a terrible call on OG.
That bothered me as well, which
I mean, I can see why it was very close.
Yeah, I don't know, they had a lot of time. Yeah,
you don't get a little bit of home cooking there.
No, you know, that's interesting actually. You know, the Knicks don't get home cooking. I mean, I'll say this one thing, Brunson does get benefit of fouls, but I think it's a Brunson thing. I don't really see it with other players. Like, there's certain players, SGA gets the benefit of fouls that bothers me in a way that I don't know if I've seen since James Harden. There's certain players who do get their, maybe it's part of their style of play that contributes it to it, that they get the benefit of whistles that is bothersome. So I will admit that Jalen does in a lot of times, but the Knicks as a general don't.
Yeah, I agree with you very much about that. But at the same time, you know, when you look for reasons for why this happened, to me, it ends like this. Their coach, Tom Thibodeau, has this obsession sometimes, not always, but with having his starting lineup out there at the end of games, when what we needed desperately was defense. Defense. You might want to guard the guy going 8 for 9 from three in the, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. The foot off the gas to me was much more defensive than offensive.
Yeah. I mean, I feel what you're saying. And at the same time, there's a part of me is like, we have to recognize what Neesmith did. That was some historic stuff. I mean, what he did, like 6-7 straight 3-pointers. It was historic. So meaning if you replayed that again with the same level of defense, even if it was lax, and you replayed that 50 times, I think 49 times, with that same defense, you win. And on this 50th time, Neesmith just went nuts. And then on top of that, Halliburton does this play that when a ball hits the back of the rim, maybe 49 times, it doesn't bounce back in the hoop. But we just happened to watch the 50th time where it did. On some level, we were looking at some David Tyree football stuck to the helmet type stuff that we have to appreciate on its own merit, not appreciate as a Knicks fan, but appreciate for just the sheer lack of a chance that we'll ever see anything like that again.
So let me leave you with this one last question, and then really we should move on to the front from this. I think that the Knicks are still in a very good position to win this series. I really do. They're tough-minded.
I need this, by the way.
Put this behind them.
Talk more.
Got another game at the Garden. If they do that right, then let's go. Let's go to Indiana. Come on. Let's do it. And
keep going.
I am confident in that. That doesn't mean Indiana won't win the next game. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're going to get in there with our heads down. I really don't.
Okay. I need you to say that because it's like it's tough to come back from something like that. However, I will remind people the Knicks did win the series after game one of that epic Reggie Miller game, when Reggie Miller fouled Greg Anthony. And it's funny, I heard Reggie Miller say, wow, I was glad we didn't have this replay back when I was playing. And I don't know if you heard that comment. And I took that to mean when he scored those 6 points in back-to-back threes, you know, he threw Greg Anthony to the ground. And a replay today might show that he threw Greg Anthony to the ground. That's a foul. I don't know if that's within scope. And I don't know if that's what he's referring to, but that might have changed some history. But I refer that to the time that Reggie Miller did not get a foul called on him. And then using that was able to score all those points.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. But the thing is, you got to have a very short memory as a player. And it's hard because a lot of us do turn to sports for escape. The Knicks making it this far is a source of great joy. I got to tell you something, Chuck. This is so one of those things I'm just going to say, and don't judge me on this, and then we can move on. I'm sitting there devastated on my couch after the overtime. Can't believe what had happened. Thinking to myself, this is the cherry on the sundae of my day. And there was a small part of me that was thinking, you know what? I'm glad all those like Fortune 500 hedge fund people who you always see on camera in the second row, third row, the top seats, you see them there with their kids, just look spoiled as heck. You see Ben Stiller. I mean, there's a small part of me that just feels like, okay, millionaires, back to your castles. I'm glad your night isn't as good as it otherwise would have been. And you know what?
Yeah.
If I got to go down with you, then so be it.
I hear what you're saying. I don't know if I could intellectually stretch my brain to that level of satisfaction, but I would be on the outside of Madison Square Garden with the people. You know what I mean? Back in the day, you could afford a ticket. You can't afford tickets. I mean, regular people can't afford tickets. It's for the rich folks. But like, you know what? I'll be in the street with all of those outside 7th Avenue. I believe yesterday many people were flooding Radio City Music Hall at $10 a ticket. You know, that's my speed.
Wow. Hey, Chuck, are you still there?
I am. Do you hear me?
Now you're back. Wow. That's wild to me. I didn't know that they were doing that.
Yeah, they were doing that. They're doing that more and more because, you know, regular people are shut out. And if you want to have that sense of community going to a game, there was one day that everybody had large screens outside of MSG and everyone was flooded outside. And then yesterday, $10 Radio City Music Hall. I do like that. If you can't see them in person, I wish prices weren't so high, but I don't think that's solvable in this capitalistic hellhole hellscape. When you add more capitalism, that is the Ticketmasters and then the StubHubs and all that, jacking up prices. You know, there's just, whether it's concerts, whether it's games, it's just not like it used to be. You can't go do anything without being set back or saving for a year unless you're already wealthy.
Very good point. Well, let's wind down the NBA talk here as we get to the bottom of the hour, because I know on the second half we want to talk about Caitlin Clark, yep, Angel Reese, and the WNBA,
yeah,
all of which are very important topics. But I got to tell you, I also really do want to talk about the WNBA, and we'll get to that in a second. But we got to just, to top off the NBA news, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, the Thunder, they won 68 games during the regular season. They set an NBA record for point differential, which doesn't get talked about enough. Like, they averaged the outscoring of their opponents by 12 points a game.
Yeah.
No one has ever touched that. And yet there were doubts upon doubts upon doubts about how they would do in these playoffs because they were so young and because they went out kind of meekly a year ago against the Dallas Mavericks in what was considered an upset. They have great player in SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and they really did, I thought, toyed after they got their sea legs under them. I thought they toyed with the Minnesota Timberwolves in game one. So just quick question for you, Chuck. Do you think the Timberwolves have a shot in this series?
I do think they have a shot. First of all, I did pick OKC to win it all for some of the many of the reasons you just said. I think they're analytically driven. I don't like them in a similar way that I don't like the Boston Celtics, in that they mastered the fact that you have this three-point line. They surround good three-point shooters around the edges. I don't like stylistically their game. I don't like, I don't want to say I don't like SGA, I don't like the way they call fouls on SGA. That you know, he he's a great player. Let me start there. He's great. So I don't want anyone to misunderstand. His level of skill is incredible. So no misunderstanding there. But, you know, he gets bailed out a lot, and there's a certain stylistic part of him where that happens, and that bothers me as well. He doesn't need any more help from the refs. So I find them not pleasing to watch for those couple of reasons. At the same time, they've mastered the analytics as far as how GM put that team together. So I have always thought that they were the favorites. But Minnesota, I do believe, can come back, and Minnesota, I think, could win. I think they have versatility. I think they have some size. But, you know, it's going to be a tough team to beat. Denver did take them to seven, and Denver did take them to seven with Michael Porter with a tough shoulder, who had a shoulder injury, who should be really sitting out. They said it would take 6 weeks for it to heal, and he had some horrible games on very close games. I believe with a healthy Michael Porter, Denver actually would have beaten OKC, particularly there was that really close game, and he shot like one for eight, missing badly some real easy shots. Jokic is always going to do what he does. Jokic is going to do what he does. So, yeah, they can be beat. But we'll see. But they're still the favorite.
Wow. Yeah, I got to think that's correct. I had high hopes for the Timberwolves, feeling much less so right now, I must say, and I must admit. But, you know, that's what we got to go through. I think that that's one of the things that a team in the NBA, it's very cliche, but it's true. They have to go through the trials. It's very rare that you see a team just shoot to the top. And frankly, your brain will struggle to think of one that did not go through the paces that the Thunder went through last year, that the Thunder went through in the earlier rounds. It's a growth process. And they're going through that right now. I find their style pleasing when they're a bunch of piranhas going after the ball, but I find their half-court sets to be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in a prayer, so that one of the other players is going to actually show up, like Jalen Williams, who I do believe to be overrated, as I do Chet Holmgren, although both are very young, so I don't want to say that. But what do you think about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? He joined Michael Jordan this year as the only players in history to average 30 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists while shooting over 50% from the floor. It's only been Jordan and Shai. His team won 68 games. They set a record for point differential. And yet Chuck Modiano does not think this man should have been the most valuable player. And I want to give you the chance to explain yourself.
Okay. No, I don't think Shai should have been the most valuable player. And first of all, if you have to say a stat like 36-6, right? Not 35-5, right? Like normally we do things on fives and tens. And more recently, they, you know, we're breaking away from maybe those more, you know, set figures. And you could do that in a lot of things and shoot 50% from shooting. But I want to get into more plain language. I believe Shai had a MVP worthy year that should have been an MVP in many other years. Not only that, I believe his year was so good that if this year's Shai was worse than last year's Joker, Shai should win the MVP over last year's Joker. I believe that as well. Joker just put in, I think, his best season, because I believe the other best season he had was when he didn't win versus Embiid, and I could make an argument on that. But I think not just his best season, but a historic season in a way we haven't ever seen. So he averaged a triple-double, and he did it as a center. Okay, only Oscar Robertson and Russell Westbrook have averaged a triple-double. But that is the least of it. He did it and was top three in all three categories. Number two in categories. Not only that, he was number two in steals as a center. Mm-hmm. He was number two in assists as a center. We've never seen anything like this in history. And because we got the fatigue of him winning MVPs, and because we got fatigue of Russell Westbrook maybe getting the triple-double, well, if Russell Westbrook doesn't exist, Joker wins this as well. we don't give that to him. That he's so good, we're so used to him getting it. And the argument that I've always heard was, well, you know, LeBron should have won some MVPs and he didn't. Jordan should have won more MVPs and he didn't. You know, they give it to the best player and the best team. I've heard all this. And, you know, those somewhat injustices are one thing. But when you do something that I would argue Joker had arguably one of the greatest in the history of the sport, that I don't know if anyone could ever duplicate. So, again, top three in four categories. We don't get top three in three categories. Not only that, he raised his three-point shooting percentage. He's a career 35% shooter. He must have been shooting in the offseason because he raised it to 42%. That was better than Steph Curry, and he shot at a pretty good volume. So we're talking about a center who's shooting a Steph Curry percentage out of the blue. We don't recognize that. So if you just take the guard skills, he's second in assists, he's second in steals, and he shot 42% from three, just guard skills. He's at the top of all the guards, and we'll never see something like that. So I feel like it's a bit of an assault on his history. Do stats matter anymore? Or if we're fatigued with someone winning the MVP, do we just stop getting it to him because somebody else didn't get it? And that's always been the case, but it's never been the case like this. And the last thing I want to say is it's the second time it's happened this year because Lamar Jackson was denied the MVP over Josh Allen. And Josh Allen, well, you know, he'd had a fine year, and I would have given Josh Allen the MVP over Lamar's season last year. Same concept. Lamar had the third greatest pass rating in history, and that is before he ran for a single yard. The other two, Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers, won MVPs. Just on passing alone, he should have gotten it. So what I believe between Joker and Lamar, we're entering an era where statistics no longer matter, where objective data no longer matters if we're tired of somebody winning the MVP. And that bothers me for an objective, truth-telling person.
And with that statement, good gracious, let's take a break right now at the bottom of the hour. This is The Collision. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin, your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. We'll be back right after this message.
I got to hit the streets off, make the streets talk, let them know it ain't a sweet ball. This gon' be the only joint made this year that'll knock to 2003. And y'all gon' see that the hottest out there was, is, and will be me. Just like that, I can go away for a minute, do some other shit, but bounce right back. And when it's on, I'm coming strapped with some that'll spit from dusk to dawn. And when you gone, ain't no coming back in the morning like that shit with the dream, you can be gone. That's for real. Creep up like a seal, talk to steel, stick it up, make him squeal. Oh my God, those can't be the last words of your man. What? Your man was so hard. Come on, bring it. What?
We are back on The Collision. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin. Magic Mike on the Wheels of Steel. Mike, what were we just playing right there?
Man, Dave, you know exactly what I was playing. That was DMX, We Right Here.
Of course I know that. I was giving you the chance to get a little bit of airtime to tip a hat to DMX.
Well, thank you, sir.
From my understanding, the largest public funeral in Brooklyn to Biggie's. I mean, right up there. I mean, people really did come out with a lot of love for DMX. Boy, no very sad passing. In the history of hip hop, one of the all-time charisma, absolutely explosions, a quasar of charisma.
Two platinum albums in 1 year.
Amazing. And in almost every track, as we say, a banger.
You know it.
Did you define quasar?
You know, it's like I don't know, man. It's like an Eastern European, only smaller. I don't know. I have no idea what a quasar is. I'm East European, so I can say that. I thought it was some big space explosion. But Chuck, let me bring this to you, man. I want to say something first of all. Can we just frame this discussion about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese? May I say a few things about it, please?
Go for it.
Before I actually say the words Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, in the context of the last couple of weeks, I just want to say how sad it makes me that when people do talk about the WNBA at its highest pitch on the big shows, it is about Caitlin Clark, or it is about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
Yes.
As if they're Rocky and Apollo Creed with all the racial designations.
But they are.
I understand.
But they are. Continue.
Yes. Are they, though? I don't see Caitlin Clark as Rocky coming in as the most anticipated prospect Cheryl Swoops. So, but I hear what you're saying. God bless Carl Weathers. Rest in peace. But like, if you search up WNBA news, you don't get like the latest scores. You don't get that Paige Bueckers is already averaging 14 points a game. You know, you don't get like some of the, like that Kelsey Plum dropped 37 in her first game in Los Angeles. You know, we're not talking about locally from a local perspective that our rookies, Georgia Moore, and then that's the rookie. And then our second year forward, Aaliyah Edwards and a couple other rookies. Georgia Moore and Aaliyah Edwards got hurt. But then these rookies, Sonia Citron and Kiki Iriafin, stepped in to lead the team to a 2-0 record to start the year. We're not talking about that. And instead, when you go to the WNBA news page, this is what you got. I'm not joking around here.
Mm-hmm.
You got 18 trillion articles about Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, Yahoo Sports, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, Seattle Times, CNN. And then the other big story, rumors that WNBA star Sophie Cunningham had an affair with the son of Phoenix Mercury owner Mark Bartlestein,
right.
Son Josh Bartlestein. So, you know, this feels very, very sexist to me, because what gets covered is fight between two famous women, alleged fight, obviously, but the specter of a fight, the wanting of a fight.
That's right.
By men to see this. I don't see women sports writers writing about it in the same kind of way. The other is something that has to do with infidelity. And so the stories don't get discussed. The fact that, you know, Asia is going after yet another MVP, it's just something that speaks to a shame of it all for all the success and the fan base that that Caitlin Clark and the WNBA has had. You know, this is just something else. I mean, she already had, I mean, Caitlin Clark, by the way, and maybe this can be a segue, set a record just the other night for the most games in WNBA history with 25 or more points, 10 or more assists. She has that record now.
Yes. And she'll shatter it keep shattering it because she's, in my view, the best passer in the league easily, and will own every passing record and keep breaking it. And passing is her bread and butter. It's not shooting. She gets too much credit for her shooting and too little credit for her passing. And I believe if the Fever can contend with the additions, if they didn't make these additions of DeJuana Bonham, Tasha Howard, they didn't make, we'll see what happens with Sophie. If they didn't make those additions, to already an all-star in Kelsey Mitchell, to already an all-star in Aaliyah Boston, then I don't think they could contend. But I do think they could contend, and I think the key is whether they, whether Caitlin wants to be Logo 3 Caitlin, or Caitlin wants to be the greatest passer ever Caitlin. And her fans do like Logo 3 Caitlin. And the problem with Logo 3 Caitlin is she shoots about 33% from Logo 3, and you have a woman named Kelsey Mitchell who shoots 40% from 3 and shot 40% from 3 before you arrived. So I think if she utilizes her teammates, she doesn't have to play like the way she did in Iowa. They can contend. If she doesn't, then I think they'll lose. But that's a basketball argument, and I want to speak to some of what you said, which I think was about male sports media, because I've never been more nervous. I've never been more nervous. I say this as a historian, but I don't want – you're a historian. I never use – I say historian with me because I have too much respect for, like, the real historians. I know you've read a lot of books, but there are people like do this – all day, every day. So I'll call myself an amateur historian. And going back to Jack Johnson, and when I look at the dynamic of how sports can impact society, I've never been more nervous. I would say maybe in more recent decades, the greatest one might have been Len Bias, when he died of a cocaine overdose. They used that during a crack hysteria. And Tip O'Neill said, get me some legislation on my desk right now. The only thing that anyone is talking about is Len Bias right now. And they rammed through a 1986 Drug Abuse Act, which is far worse than 1994, made crack cocaine possession illegal for 5 years, automatic incarceration for 5 years. The crack versus cocaine 100-to-1 disparity went into effect, mandatory minimum sentencing. Just to use one example of where a popular culture and an athlete being misused could impact society. So I often think of Len Bias because he doesn't get talked about maybe as he should. And I say that is because there's a hysteria going on. And that hysteria with Caitlin Clark, you have a mob. I don't know what percentage. Let's say it's half. But you have a mob. And in this mob, I am having basketball discussions that I've never had in the male sphere in my entire life. All of a sudden, if I'm arguing about Angel Reese, for the first time in my life, rebounds don't seem to matter. Rebounds aren't a big deal. No one said that about Dennis Rodman. We appreciated what he did. We didn't say, well, Dennis Rodman's got to score more points. No, we didn't do that. We said, wow, he's incredible at what he does. I find myself defending Angel Reese, who just broke the WNBA record for rebounds as a rookie, no less. Now, let me just see. I want people to hear what I just said. She didn't lead the NBA. She broke the all-time WNBA record as a rookie. I believe if there was any man who broke the all-time NBA record as a rookie, they would be celebrated. Of course, that's impossible because no one is going to break Wilt Chamberlain's 27 rebounds per game in 1960. But even if you broke the more modern-day record after the 1990s of Dennis Rodman's 18.6, all what we'd be talking about is their rebounding prowess. And yet there's a contingent, if not majority, of this Caitlin mob who tell me Angel Reese sucks, who show clown her with clips of her missing shots, who say the only reason she gets all these rebounds because she rebounds her own misses because they don't do the actual research. It's only 12.8%. They don't want to speak to the other 87%. And you're talking about these sports arguments that you've never had before in the male sphere because they're bringing the idiots along. But they're not just bringing the idiots along. It's the barstool crowd. It's the men. It's the all men, but particularly white men. The barstool crowd, your Portnoy's, your Outkick crowd. And women have never had to contend with that crowd because the men in history, and you've written about, you know, your great book on sports history and the history of people's history of sports. You've written about this. And at no point was there both a woman on a pedestal for men, because men ignore women up to this point. Men ignore women. And has there been a black woman villain like Angel Reese? You might have had pockets where Serena, you know, she talked bad to an ump, but Serena played four Grand Slams a year.
Yeah.
So you had pockets. You never had it in a rivalry in this way where it's daily. And if you're a historian, if I'm wrong about this in a team sport, you could tell me. But I've gone through history and I haven't seen it. And it's creating a hysteria because this mob is really running the league. And the last thing I'll say about it, the worst thing about it is the mainstream media, the men in mainstream media are playing it up. The ESPN is playing it up. When they started the first game, they were showing in the intro, back in LSU when Angel puts the hand before her face that so many people took exception to. They don't take exception when Caitlin talks junk, but they took exception to Angel, and it's racialized, and they call her thug, and they say racist stuff. And ESPN, all they see is dollar signs, and they're playing this rivalry up, not knowing, no, this isn't even exactly Bird and Magic. There's real hatred there. And there's going to be repercussions. And don't be surprised if Trump weighs in. And don't be surprised if right wingers weigh in and manipulate this for political ends. And those are some of my fears.
Well, I got to say, I am less fearful about people like Trump weighing in for the simple reason that Caitlin Clark has come forward to decry any hate and racism that Angel Reese receives. And what they always look for, and we saw this over the Olympics with Imani Khalef, the boxer that they accused incorrectly of being transgender, and that was whipped up by not only the Italian government, but by the state police officer who was the Olympic boxer who was in the ring getting knocked out by Imani Khalef. And they always leave that part of the story out, that Italy has a quasi-fascist government and a member of the state police, you know, which is aggressively against not just trans people, but Algerian people, Muslim people. And so they took that opportunity to pretend to cover up that loss. And they had a willing participant. I think Caitlin Clark's resistance to being that kind of figure, even if it's not maybe as fiery as we want, but the fact that the league, with the endorsement of both Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever, want this kind of hate that's being thrown on Angel Reese to be investigated also tells me, Chuck, that what we aren't seeing is probably pretty gruesome.
I probably deal with it a lot because I've actually engaged the Caitlin mob. I know the websites where they post all these, manipulate all these stats, and the people who manipulate stats, they affect all the casuals. So I get the same flawed charts of stats. I get the same Angel sucks. And they're all, this crowd is just really stupid, just on basketball. And the difference is that the Angel Reese crowd, even if they're going back and forth, they acknowledge Caitlin can ball out. Like, I don't hear Caitlin sucks at ball, right? I could critique her turnovers, which was 5.7 and broke the NBA record, and how she has to reduce that. You know, I could critique that she maybe shoots too many threes, but I don't doubt that she is and will be a much better player. But when you talk to the Caitlin crowd, they say Angel sucks. When you talk to the Caitlin crowd, she's limited. She only does one thing. Well, if you do one thing better than anyone in the history of the game, I want you to keep doing that one thing and do rebounding, defense, and anything else is a bonus, because what you need to do is surround her with shooters, right? So I get these arguments, and I am somewhat fearful in that if Caitlin, the remarks she's making, they're not working, right? They're not strong enough, in my view. I mean, as far as from the point of view of, will it stop this train? And it's a train that I think is only going to get worse because everybody's making money off that train. And the only time, the most recent time I've seen something where everybody made money off that train, so they worked all the coverage, as you stated so well at the beginning of this conversation, was Lance Armstrong. And that I remember, and you remember, because you were one of the very few people in the early days writing about Lance Armstrong. One of the few people in sports media, and I bet if you wrote at ESPN, they wouldn't let you issue those articles you're writing at The Nation. And everyone protected Lance. Everyone. The media, and when David Walsh wrote a book called The Secrets of Lance Armstrong in 2004, you couldn't even publish it in America. And he was failing tests back in 1999. When Greg LeMond in 2008 crashed a conference of Lance Armstrong and said, hey, you're a fraud. And he called him out, Greg LeMond being the greatest cyclist American cyclist pre-Lance Armstrong. It couldn't make news except one daily news article. Imagine if Hank Aaron crashed a Barry Bonds conference and what we'd be dealing with. So it took almost 15 years for the media to finally say, yeah. And I haven't seen the type of protection or a moneymaker or a cash cow, a white cash cow, like that and I'm looking at Caitlin and I'm seeing a cash cow that no one's going to mess with.
Mm. You know, I think there's another aspect about this too that I think needs to be said, which is we got to get to a point where it's okay to not like Angel Reese's game. It's okay to not like Caitlin Clark's attitude on the court. It's like we have to be able to critique these folks, you know, the same way we would critique male athletes.
Yeah.
But the sexism is just so strong. It's like people are so embattled right now in our society because there's, for example, so much sexism and so much racism.
There's so much sexism.
Not to mention every other ism.
Yeah.
That, you know, that they hear you say something like, yeah, I really appreciate Angel Reese's sportsmanship. And you know, that I feel like there needs to be a way to just not say, well, that's a racial trope, you know, or comparing, you know, the Jack Johnson comparison is interesting. Only insofar is that Johnson was also not the most likable person in the world.
Right.
And we can say, for a lot of reasons, and we can say that we both respect Jack Johnson and what he represented to people and his willingness to stand straight until they did eventually break him. But man, did he last a long time.
Yeah.
The comparison... That works for me. That level of comparison, although Jack Johnson also, and this is again about men and women and sexism, did things, of course, that Angel Reese would never consider doing, because Jack Johnson was able to do it in terms of the way he treated some of the women in his life.
So to use the Jack Johnson analogy, and I know we're going back over 100 years, but Jack Johnson wasn't about Jack Johnson. If, you know, after Jack Johnson, they wouldn't let a black man fight for the title. You had a guy, he was with Jack Dempsey. He's the main challenger. Harry, black fighter. I can't believe my name was going blank. I've studied him so much. Harry Wills. Yeah, Harry Wills, who was the greatest black fighter alongside Johnson, never could get a shot. And then you couldn't get a shot up from Joe Louis. And that was only because he wouldn't be pictured with white women and he would have to be humble in front of the camera. And so there was this later effect. And I think, you know, Caitlin and Angel, you're not just talking about some, the way people are talking about Angel, particularly white people and particularly white men, they're talking about more than Angel. They're talking about black women. That's what they're talking about. They're using Angel as a receptacle for hatred to talk about black women in ways that is kind of disgusting. They're not respecting the Aja Wilsons. They're not respecting the rest of the league. They're just coming for Caitlin. Let's say it's half. It's half the fan base. I'm not sure. And it's poisoning the fan base. And because that fan base makes so money, I see ridiculous arguments being played to. So for just to give you one little thing. We know media loves to just make stuff up for ratings. Now, if someone big on media says some crazy stuff, we mock that person for being crazy. But when last year, when Aja Wilson was having the greatest season in WNBA history, hands down, she ended up winning unanimously, as she should, the greatest season in history that we want to celebrate, there were announcers of very high profile, and they were saying, you know, Caitlin is in the conversation for MVP. And you're like, come on, that's disrespectful to what Aja Wilson's doing. But if we were talking about male sports, that person would be laughed at. That person would be ridiculed. And yet there is a huge segment of the Caitlin base who believes just that and is entertaining. And I was arguing with them, not one, not two, not an outlier, a huge segment believe she was worthy of the MVP. So what they're doing is playing with fire because you have a delusional base and they're just trying to get ratings off this delusion. And that delusional base is saying, see, even ESPN said it, when the truth is ESPN's trying to make money off that base.
Well, that's a great point to end on for folks. Really appreciate what you brought to the table this week, Chuck. Definitely a lot to think about. Definitely, y'all, Sports should be a place of both resistance and escape, not a repository for racism and sexism and attacks on the marginalized. Thank you so much, Chuck. Thank you,
Magic. Thank you.
I'm Dave Zirin. Please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
How to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Equal Portions is delighted to join Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, every Monday at 1 p.m. We're talking everything food justice, interviewing folks across all sectors, and playing the hottest new DMV music with your host, Sasha Lamira.
Hey, y'all. On Equal Portions, we'll be discussing all aspects of the way we interact with food, from the problems affecting our communities to the history and the story of the food around us and the local individuals within the food community. That's Equal Portions, Mondays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. This is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new showgram, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free your mind!
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct Professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
Freedom!
June is Caribbean American Heritage Month. Thus, CAWI, CPN, ICS, AFI, and Africa World Now Project present the 23rd DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th, at AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring. The festival showcases the best in Caribbean cinema with films such as the U.S. premiere of Fanon and more. The DC Caribbean Film Fest, June 6th to June 12th. Information at afi.com/silver or 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Rita Burns.
And this is Mason Burns. It is happening again. A celebration of my dad's legacy. The Capitol House Music Festival salutes
Sam the Man Burns. A full day of DJs and performers, including the vocalist and house music icon, Julie McKnight. A full day of joy.
Saturday, May 24th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at Aletheia Tanner Park.
This is an official Black Pride and World Pride event, and this event is for everyone. For more information, caphousefest.com. WPFW is proud to be a media sponsor, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Don't let that bus flash your body.
You must learn.
Just like I told you.
You must learn.
Peace. Hashtag-
Hashtag You Must Learn is your Thursday at 6 p.m. Liberatory Educational Radio Show, and we mourn the April 25th passing of the educational giant, Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu. So the Hashtag You Must Learn Collective is hosting a four-hour special program honoring Dr. Kunjufu on Thursday, May 29th from 3 to 7 p.m. We're going to have legendary elders who work directly with him, as well as juggernaut educators who were inspired by Dr. Kunjufu to reflect on his life. That's right, a four-hour special program honoring Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu on Thursday, May 29th from 3 to 7 p.m. Tune into this special program as WPFW builds a better world one broadcast at a time.